Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Coaching Call podcast. On this podcast, we'll cover various types of coaching by trainers in sports, martial arts, fitness, and business. We'll discuss each coach's methods to getting the most out of their respective athletes or clients and how they attempt to change the platform in which they coach. Join us on a fun adventure as we discuss unique coaching styles. We've all been coached before, in school, at work, or on a team. Coaching is a universal part of how we get others to get something done. Join your host, Rafael, and his guests on this unique journey in coaching.
Hi, I'm Sifu Rafael, and this is the Coaching Call podcast. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. This episode was made possible by listeners like you. If you enjoy my show, go ahead and buy me a cup of coffee. Make it a large. To donate, go to paypal.me/SifuRafael. That's SifuRafael. I'm trying to keep this podcast free of advertisements. Anything you can donate is greatly appreciated. Thank you. I really appreciate your support. My guests today are Ron and Jesse James Kosakowski. Ron is a master martial arts expert, owner, and head instructor of the Practical Self-Defense Training Center since 1988. Jesse James is an instructor at his father's school and an MMA fighter with aspirations to become a world champion. Hi guys, I'm here with Ron and Jesse. We are going to get the insight from a coach and his son who he coaches. Ron, tell us how you got started. You really have had a full life of martial arts and training and coaching. Would you share it with us?
Okay. Well, I started martial arts. Basically, I started off with a karate style back in the 60s. Then I discovered Filipino martial arts back in the mid 70s. I went on from there just learning as many martial arts as I could possibly learn, actually. I just went nuts with it. I became fanatic, actually. I was going to, you know, seminars, private lessons, their class, the training camps. And I did that for quite a few years. I have this lust and this love for martial arts. It's just something that really attracts me to it, especially Filipino martial arts. I can't say I don't like what's involved with our MMA. What's involved in our MMA is basically Jeet Kune Do, Muay Thai, and what I call integrated grappling systems, which is a lot of different styles of grappling that I find one martial art is missing a piece, another one fills that void. But the Filipino martial arts really have me something about it, has my attention to, you know, the culture, the history. And it just seems like it has a lot of answers to self-defense. The others have, you know, the Jeet Kune Do, the Muay Thai, and the grappling have a lot of answers to what is needed in the cage, actually, and in the ring. So that's, I've been coaching fighters for a long time. You know, I started, my first fighters were probably in 1991. The ones that I had actually won their first kickboxing matches. There wasn't too much around, but there was some. And I've been coaching people since. And when grappling tournaments got big, we always had a big pile of people we used to bring to the grappling tournaments. They were always winning all the time. They were always coming home with a bunch of people with a bunch of trophies of first place, second place, things like that. And then when MMA got bigger, I had my first one. I think he was my first one. Actually, Randy Rowe, Randy the Savage, he was called at the time. He's older now, but this is back in the 90s in the early 21st century. He was winning a lot of different tournaments, grappling tournaments, and then, of course, the MMA tournaments. This was going back when they used to say, how much do you weigh? And he'd say his weight. And the other guy, well, how much do you weigh? And he'd say his weight. And they say, okay, you guys are going to fight. You know, it was different back then.
absolutely.
Yeah. I know. I don't even think they, it was bare knuckle actually back in those days, come to think of it. So there was no hand wrapping, and then hand wrapping came, you know, a little while later. So basically that's my story on how it went. I mean, you know, Randy was beating everybody up. He got that name, the Savage, for a reason. Then I had other guys fighting and winning also. So as well, you know what it was? I think because back in those days, not many were grappling, especially in the 90s and early 21st century, especially, you know, up until not too long ago, really, not many people were grappling like, you know, they are today.
Correct.
You know, I've been on under Larry Hartzell, who was the only ones that were grappling were the people that were learning Jeet Kune Do from Larry Hartzell, actually, back then. And he was teaching the catch wrestling and the Shuto, which basically are the same thing. And of course, I was learning also from the Gracies at the time. And then I went to a bunch of other Brazilian jiu-jitsu people and then Russian Sambo, and then, of course, you know, catch wrestling and everything else. I just started training as many as I can and basically teach that to my son. He's been doing really good with it because when he started fighting, he won his first match. And I think, was it his first match? I can't remember, Jesse, was the first match you took. Yeah, he did. He took
Jesse, what match was that? Tell us a little bit about that match, Jesse.
Go ahead. Your first match. You got the trophy. Okay, your very first amateur match, you took the belt, right? It wasn't I'm getting mixed up because you've had so many.
Oh, well, no, that went to a decision. My very first MMA fight went to a decision. That was versus Rafael Edwards. That was November 2015. But I that was the only fight that I've won that I didn't finish. I didn't finish that fight. That fight went to a decision. But I got the belt.
Yeah.
Definitely got the belt, brought the belt home.
Yeah, you dominated also.
Dominated though. Yeah. I won every single round, but he was hard to submit. He was very strong, that dude. He was 4-0. He was actually 4-0 at the time, 4 wins by knockout. And my dad goes, I was kind of nervous. I was like, man, this is my first MMA fight. I'm going to be fighting this dude. And he's like, nah, you got it. He's like, we got the science. And sure enough, went out there and pretty much dominated all three rounds. That was that fight.
It is about the science, without a doubt.
Yeah. For sure, it definitely is. A lot of guys work hard. A lot of guys are tough, but, you know, it takes a special person to be smart, you know what I mean, to make the right decisions at the right times. You know what I mean? Like, a smart fighter is going to have a lot longer career than just a tough or hardworking fighter.
Without a doubt. Ron, let me ask you, I mean, you obviously love martial art, but what was when did you decide or who influenced you to start coaching? Because you've coached a lot of people.
Well, I think it's just the love of seeing my art out there. I didn't get to do too many fights. I mean, back in the old days, I used to do point fighting. And then later on, I did some kickboxing. Actually, kickboxed for the North American Wing Chun Association. I don't think that's around anymore, but, you know, I kickboxed for them. And then I did a Muay Thai fight back in, I think that was around 91 also. I got in a car accident, fractured my back right after that. I remember, in fact, right after that, I think it was the day after that fight.
You definitely have a passion for martial arts. There's absolutely no doubt. And I mean, it's incredible all the people you've trained with. I was looking at the list. It's really an abundant list of everyone you've trained with. But you've trained people, and that's what I want to know. I mean, this is what we want to know. It's what motivated you to train people, and how did you start training people?
Well, when I started seeing tournaments around and my students having the interest in doing the tournaments, I just wanted to see my martial art in action and see how it worked. You know, doing it myself is one thing, but seeing other people doing it, you want to be teacher, fighter, technician, you know, not just, you know, a fighter or not just a teacher. A technician knows how to teach it also, you know, and get the point across to others. And basically, I guess that's it. And seeing, you know, it's like forming a sculpture, you know, basically just seeing other people pulling off the moves that you taught them, to me is probably like a big turn on, actually, you know. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a cool thing to see.
When you've trained someone, obviously, you have to decide if they're ready for that type of atmosphere, if they're ready to step into a ring or a cage or an actual match and the type of match they're going to be stepping into. What determines who you decide to train in that category? Is it their drive, or is it the fact that they just want to do it, or is it the fact that you see something in them?
Probably all the above, I would say, just because when I see them training all the time, for example, they're there. I got guys right now that can't get a fight, but yet they're there training and, you know, they're sparring all the time. They're grappling all the time, you know, and they're determined. They want to fight. They're all telling me every day, man, I can't wait to get a fight, you know, because of this COVID thing, you know, they can't, it's hard for the amateurs right now to get fights. As far as Jesse goes, I think what happened is, I mean, he, you know, 8 or 9 years old, I can't remember. It was he lost his first fight. He came in first place, didn't get tapped out, but he came in fourth place and I remember him, he had a certain look on his face. He goes, you know, he wanted to do more fights. And he goes, I'm telling mom I'm quitting soccer so I could do more with martial arts. And that
That's
alone,
awesome.
I know. He was determined. And then he, you know, I think his next fight, he got second place. And then he was getting first place in all his kickbox matches and his grappling tournaments. And he must have had, I don't even know how many grappling tournaments, 40, 50. I don't even know. You know, I never counted, but he was all over the place. A lot of Naga, you know, and other companies also. You know, that was as he was growing up. You know, of course, Giancarlo used to hold these kickboxing matches. He was pretty much the only one around when he was a lot younger, doing all these kickboxing matches. And, you know, by the time he hit his later teens, mid-teens to later teens, other people started holding them. And, I mean, he was ready. Everybody's been saying since he was like 10 years old, I think, he's ready for the UFC. I mean, you know, he's UFC bound, at least not ready, but, you know, I mean, UFC bound because of his determination, you know.
Mm-hmm. So, Jesse, let me ask you, do you recall that time with your first fight and that you were so determined that you wanted to quit soccer just to pursue that?
I actually do. Matter of fact, I remember I was 8 years old, actually, not nine. Yeah, it was at a tournament called the Dragon Slayer. And I remember being so nervous, man, because it was my first competition. I had never competed before, and I really didn't know what to expect. But honestly, I'm going to tell you what, I definitely cried after the match. I was upset that I didn't get the win. I mean, I'm pretty hard on myself, not necessarily because I have an expectation, but like I'm a very competitive type of person. When I went home that day, I remember I slept on the car ride home because I was so tired. I probably had like probably 8 matches that day, I would imagine. Right, Dad? I think it was something like that.
I think it was a lot of matches. A bunch of matches, yes. Yes.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot of matches. I was actually exhausted. I remember being sore the next day. But I remember that car ride home. I was like, you know what? I'm putting my all into this. I like this. And you know what? I think I showed up my next tournament, got like third place, one after that, second. And then once I got my first place, I was definitely all in, man. I was training every day. Nice. Every day I'd get home from school. It'd be like 5 p.m. We'd go down to the gym early and work. I'd work until probably 8:30, 9:30 o'clock at night. Then I'd go home and do my homework, go to sleep, wake up and do it again every single day.
Jesse, how was it growing up with such an amazing person at home? Not only is you love him because he's your dad, but he's also your trainer. He's your coach. I mean, how was that for you?
It's a little bit different because, you know, you kind of got that like expectation to perform at like a certain level, you know, during class and everything. But I would say I was a little bit more like serious about it growing up. Like I was kind of like really hard on myself. And I've learned as I've grown older and wiser, I've been like a little bit more lenient. I'm still strict. Don't get me wrong. I train every single day. I train probably twice a day every day. But the difference being I'm a little bit more lax, you know, because you can't sit and meditate under waterfalls and eat salads every day. I mean, you got to make sure you live a little, relax a little, and, you know, get your rest and recovery time too. You know, I'll tell you what, self-care goes a long way. That's real important, but you still got to work hard because I'll tell you what, all these boys work hard.
Without a doubt. Let me ask you, what's your fighting name?
Fight name? I actually just go by my full name, Jesse James Kozakowski. Cool. So when I walk out, I don't have a fight name. I just go by my first, middle, and last, about it.
And when did you turn pro?
I turned pro January of 2018. I had my last amateur fight. I won the Premier FC title at 170, and then I went pro. My first pro fight, I fought this wrestler, Hugh McKenna. I submitted him in the second round by I think it was a shoulder lock submission from Kisukatami.
Very cool. Very cool. And Ron, do you feel a little frustrated now that you have all these guys ready to fight and because of COVID, it's not happening? But we are seeing a lot of UFC fights going on.
Yes, I'm very frustrated over this. In fact, I feel bad. He's at the peak of his career right now. I mean, you know, he's training. He went down to Florida to train with a lot of UFC and Bellator fighters. My guys have been bopping around to different gyms. You know, they've been wrestling other people. They've been kickboxing other people. They went to a boxing gym to just a box. And it seems like, you know, what's going on right now? I feel so bad because, you know, they're all young. And they're you know, their time is passing by and everything's I feel like, you know, the rug has been pulled out right from under them right now. And I mean, I give them credit for training and you know, Jesse never stopping, you know, of course, you know, that shows me determination, which helps my attitude on it. It makes me not want to give up. If everybody else gave up, I don't even know what I would do. You know, I mean, you know, it is frustrating. It's frustrating times for every business right now, no matter what it is. So, I mean, I understand, you know, the fight game also. Yeah. A lot of gyms. I know somebody that put $250,000 into his gym or something. And I saw it was closed when my wife and I went to go eat at a restaurant. And I said, I know this guy. And then I looked in the gym and I saw, you know, him close. And we see him at every fight. I've been seeing this guy at every fight since I've been bringing Jesse to grappling tournaments, my other guys to grappling tournaments. I see this guy around. Mm. And one of the Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys at the school told me that, you know, he put $250,000 into his business and he closed down. Mm. I mean, you can't pay the rent. What are you going to do? You know, it's crazy times right now. I've never seen anything like this, you know?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, but actually, Nick Newell, one of my coaches over in Milford, FACT, he was saying one of the guys that I know who competes at like all the different local MMA events, John Manley, both the Manley brothers, actually, their business closed. And that was really upsetting to hear because they've been around. Like, there's a lot of gyms, like well-known gyms. I heard the GF team in Bridgeport closed. COVID really did. It did tax a lot of the gyms throughout this whole community, man. It's pretty sad.
It is.
Yeah. Definitely did it all.
We almost lost our gym. We came close to losing our gym. Yeah, just recently, people are calling me and saying I'm sick and tired of being home and I got to do something. And they've been coming in, and which helped. I mean, it's just like, you know, pick up where I'm, you know, just covering the rent, and which I don't mind, you know, because I got another business holding me on, you know, but I was dishing out a lot of money out of my pocket to hold on to the place.
Thank God for that.
It was crazy.
It is.
Frustrating. And, you know,
and it sucks for, I'm sorry to interrupt you, man.
You know, it's changed the way people do business. It's changed the way everybody has had to adapt. And as far as coaching, it's brought a different level of coaching out of people. Now a lot of people are doing it over the phone. They're doing it over a virtual, whether it's Zoom or WebEx or any of these other platforms.
A lot of Zoom.
And a lot of people have really understood that when things get tough, we need to get tougher. We need to do something. We cannot just sit back and just hang out and hope and pray that things just come back to normal. We don't know when this will stop. Ron, when you have a fighter going in right before they go in, what advice do you give them? They may be nervous. They may be jittery. What advice do you give?
Well, one thing I've learned, of course, after having so many different fighters, and then by the time, you know, my son was up and going over, you know, and one thing I've learned, there's different things. Yes, you need the motivation speeches, you know, like, you know, kill this MF-er, you know what I mean? It's like basically, you know what I mean, in a roundabout way. But the thing is, it's more than just that. You also have to give the person alone time. And what I do is, you know, with Jesse, I actually learned this with him. And I notice when I give him alone time, he gets very internal. I let him be. And then when, you know, we have another guy that comes up, I even tell him, just leave him alone. You know what I mean? And it's just like, you know, I don't want anybody talking to him, things like that. Even, you know, fans coming in. It's like, at that point, I just tell everybody, you know, how about later on? You know what I mean? I don't want to get rid of the fans, you know, but I just want to tell them, you know, just give them some alone time. And then I start when on the way down, when we're in the line and we're ready to go, they call us up. I start the motivational speech. I said, you know, move your head, keep your feet moving, keep your hands up. Don't forget this move. Don't forget that move. You know what I mean? Follow up with this move, things like that, you know, basically, and just, you know, a little reminder. And of course, you know, it's like, you know, we have a traditional hug that we do before the game, you know, because it's, you know, the power of love is there too, you know, so that's another thing. So it just seems like we have our own little routine that we do now before the fight, and it just seems to really perk him up, I notice, you know, and keep him going.
I love how you send him in there with love and determination. I love that part. Because you know what?
Yeah.
They need to focus, and understand that you have their back. And they also need to focus that they need to come back with a W at all costs.
Yes.
He forgot one thing, though. He forgot the pep talk.
I did say that. You know?
You tell him to go in there and you're like, you're going to fucking.
Yeah, I know.
You're going to fucking kill him. You said that every time.
I know. That's the thing. It's like, you know, and I feel like I'm the one going to kill him. It's like when I get into it, it's no like mercy. My energy is probably
potent. He literally tells you to go in there. He literally tells you to go in there, look him dead in the eye.
Absolutely. No mercy.
Get the win.
So let me ask you, and we all see the UFC fights, and sometimes in between rounds, their coaches come over, they give them advice, and the fighter goes back out there and did nothing of what the coach did. Has that happened to you, Ron?
Probably maybe the last couple of fights, I thought so. Maybe, you know, I don't know why. I mean, basically most of it just because he grew up with these martial arts, and it's not too hard to coach him and remind him of something.
I'm not just talking about Jesse. I'm talking about any fighter, because you've had more than Jesse as a fighter. In between rounds, and you give him, you say, hey, you know what? He don't move to his left, and boom, all of a sudden he's moving to his left. I mean, how does that make you feel?
I've never really had that, because the way I train people, I think it's, you know, basically that's what they're bringing into the ring. You know, if I had somebody say from, you know, quit one team and came to me, I could see that being a little bit difficult because they got old habits or something like that. But pretty much the habits are there the way I teach. And, you know, because it's drilled and it's constant, and it's probably boring the way I teach, because, you know, you got to do it and do it and do it millions of times. You know what I mean? And, you know, it's not, I don't want to be one to do the same old shit all the time. But, you know, guess what? The same old shit is what you're going to be using in the ring. It's a sport and it's one thing. You know what I mean? You got to get in there, you know, and either, you know, immobilize the other person's hands, get out of his center line so he can't hit you good, and hit him while he's on your center line, you know.
It's
kind of simple. Yeah. And so it's based on simplicity, the way I teach. It's based on Jeet Kune Do, very much all Jeet Kune Do principles on the stand-up aspects of it.
How do you feel, and how do you deal with a loss of one of your fighters if they've had a loss?
It's part of the game. Thing is, you know, I've been tapped out before. What it always did for me was make me better. And I feel that that's the same thing for the fighters. You gotta, if you're going on a winning streak, you have nothing challenging you, you know, really. So you need one loss. I mean, look what it did when he was a kid, you know, and now, you know, his last fight, you know, he made a mistake, and, you know, he realized the mistakes, and, you know, it's like, you know, from what he did in the last fight, and he worked on him. And, you know, that problem that he had to solve, he's been training in.
It's always a learning lesson, man.
Yeah, it's that's what it is. I mean, life is like that. If you just do everything good, you don't know the bad. You don't have yin and yang, really. You know what I mean? That's the bottom line. You know, you need that balance of, you know, seeing both sides of the fence.
Even if you're not taking L's, L's in your fights, you should at least be taking L's in the gym, like losing rounds of sparring. You know, like there's different like losses that you take in life. You know what I mean? Like just in training in general, like you should definitely be challenging yourself all the time. You know, going to other gyms, getting other experience. That's how you grow. You're not going to grow working with the same people all the time that you're beating up on all the time. You know, you shouldn't be winning in training 100% of the time. You got to be tested.
Yes.
All the time.
I strongly believe you should always train with people better than you so you can learn from them. If you learn with somebody who's at your level or below your level, what are you going to learn? Not much. So I agree with you on that.
Yeah, no. 100%.
My teacher, Dan Anasanto, for example, actually Larry Hartzell used to say the same thing. You know, they used to go, you need to train with somebody smaller than you, same size as you, bigger than you, not as good as you, as good as you, and better than you. And it seems like, you know, with my son hitting, you know, like a FAA, he meets those kind of people. Going down to Florida, he meets those kind of people. Even, you know, when people come to our school, you know, to train or something like that with him, and you know, he sees those kind of people. So it's like the variety is what creates the fighter also. You can't just be in your own gym and, you know, and do the same old thing all the time. You know, that's not going to give you that variety and alternative moves to all the different angles of attack that could potentially happen.
As a coach, you obviously, there's a lot of coaches out there. Do you follow any coaches currently so that you can say, I like the way they're doing this or doing that? Do you follow anyone?
One thing I always admired was Muhammad Ali's coach and Mike Tyson's coach.
I know that's not MMA, but I like the things they do, and I kind of adapt what they're doing from there into what I'm doing. And I noticed it was like that thing I said before, consistency, various different patterns to see if they pull it off. I learned how to coach from my teacher, Larry Hartzell, a lot of the coaching, John Pereira, who used to put out a lot of judo champions, and he's, you know, I learned a lot of coaching from him. You know, there's other coaches I look at what they do. I see a lot that I don't agree with, that, you know, so you can learn from even that, believe it or not. It's like, oh boy, I wouldn't want to do that.
Yes, you do learn from them.
Yes. So, I mean, in particular names, not really, you know, there's some things that Jesse has said, you know, maybe Nick Newell does, he goes, he does it like that. And I said, I like that, and I'll adapt it. So you learn from other experienced people too. So I'm not the only one in the game. So if there's something, you know, absorb what's useful, disregard what's not, take only what's your own, you know, and that's what I do.
Let me ask you, who influenced you the most with, I mean, you've trained with so many people and some of them are really famous in the martial arts world. Who would you say influenced you the most and what kind of advice did they give you?
I got to say, you know, of course, Larry Hartzell, I know I brought him up a lot. He's one of my biggest influences. But even to this day, I train a lot. I trained not a real lot, but, you know, quite a bit with Eric Paulson. He's always given me new advice, you know, when it comes to Jesse. And, you know, especially the day before his fight, I'll get texts with advice and what to do with him or a week before the fight or whatever, you know. And he definitely gives me different pieces of advice to do with him. And I follow it because, again, you know, he was one of the first MMA fighters. Basically, that's it, I'd say, as far as who I get advice from.
And Jesse, I mean, I know you train with your dad, but who else do you currently train with?
I train, obviously, with my dad, like you said, but I train with Nick Newell and Roger Denton over at FAACT. That's over in Milford, Connecticut. And then I train with Robert Beeman. That's my strength conditioning coach. I also do pads with him often. I work boxing with him, and he's very knowledgeable in the range of boxing specifically. So I work with him, and he's a very, very good strength coach as well. He's definitely got my strength up to par. We do a lot of different dynamic type of workouts that work like real intricate muscle groups that a lot of strength conditioning coaches don't really use. You know, like they'll do a lot of typical type of exercise. He really mixes it up, uses a lot of resistance bands. He's done a lot of different classes, worked with like a lot of different people, and he's certified. So very knowledgeable guy. I also have been doing pads with one of my friends, Walnut, who's also very good at holding pads. So I work with him a few times a week, actually, doing pad work. So I work with quite a lot of different people. I've done a lot of seminars in this area with my dad, usually alongside my dad, and then just traveling around. I was actually working down at Sanford MMA for 2 months, from the months of July all the way till about October, about the beginning of October. So I was working there for a long time with Henry Hoof, Kickboxing, Greg Jones Wrestling. So we were doing the wrestling program there, and Coach Kami as well. And all of those coaches are extremely knowledgeable, working with UFC fighters, Bellator fighters, ONE FC, you name it. So, you know, those guys had a lot of experience, and they also had tons of bodies on the mats. I mean, I can go on and on, you know, name after name of very famous, you know, very experienced, good seasoned fighters. And that was awesome work. Came and began to tell you how good a work that was. Tell you one thing, you take some ass whoopings in the gym, you learn a lot from it.
Without a doubt.
Also,
So
you definitely do.
Let me ask you, Jesse, do you think that nowadays a fighter, if they have natural ability, if they're strong or whatever, would they do well without a coach? Or any of the, you mentioned so many coaches, would they do well?
I think I feel like a coach plays a specific role, and you do need a coach. I think you should have the mentality to be able to fight whether a coach is there or not, though, because, I mean, shit, if you're alone by yourself on the street, you know, you can't have a coach telling you, oh, do this, do that. You gotta be independent. You know, when I'm fighting, I can't even tell you, I barely hear my coaches when I'm fighting. I'm zoned in. I'm literally tunnel vision, just thinking about one thing, and that's winning the fight, getting the job done. I hear little things like here and there, you know, while I'm in the middle of something, maybe my dad will call out, oh, do this, or my friend Mikey, Mike Kimball, he also corners me, and he'll yell something out, and I'll hear, oh, throw an elbow from here, and then it'll pop into my head. But besides that, you should be independent when you're fighting. You can't depend on your coaches to get you out of scenarios and situations.
Right. Once you're in the fight, it's just you. Your coach is who prepped you for the fight.
100%.
Once you're in it, it's you.
Oh, yeah, it's you and the other guy across the cage, man.
I mean, you take everything they've taught you, right? You take everything they taught you, but it's just you and the other guy. Mm-hmm.
But a coach is also a second set of eyes, though, also. That's another thing. You know, you need that second set of eyes. I feel, and he's subconscious. All the guys, they're zoned, but I'll tell you what, they subconsciously hear. I've said things to him that he did. Coincidentally, he might have just done it because, you know, that's what he does. But he's responded numerous times, and he's also told me, he goes, wow, I didn't even hear you.
Yeah, I barely.
You know? So subconsciously, they do hear you.
I'll be honest, I barely do hear anything, though.
Yeah, it's probably, you know, you don't know it because you're in the zone.
Well, pre-COVID, I used to not really hear anything because the crowd would be going ballistic, and when the crowd's being loud, you could barely hear your coach, period. That's one thing I got to thank my boy Mikey for, because he's like stupid loud, so I can actually hear him over the voices. A lot of times, then I don't even hear you. Once in a while, if I bring the guy next to the corner where I'm like closer to our corner, I'll be able to hear you perfectly. I remember in my Bellator fight, I think I was close to the corner because I heard you guys clear as day. Posture up, posture up. As soon as I heard that, I was like, oh, bet. I'm going to posture up and I'm elbow him. And sure enough, it was there. That is good. It's good to get those little reminders, those little tips. But I'll tell you what, you know, your coach isn't the one fighting for you. It's you.
Yeah.
You versus the other guy across the cage, and you know only one of you is going to get the win. So it's really, it really boils down to the fighter.
Well, Jesse, I want to wish you luck in hopefully getting a fight soon, because I know that you are most ready because you're training every day, twice a day, and everybody who wants to be a professional fighter needs to do that.
Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. We look forward to cheering on for you. Ron, as a coach, what would you say is the best advice that you've given to someone?
Basically, train the science. I mean, that's the thing. You can't just haphazardly throw these rounded punches or punch or kick and then run away. I like to keep people in fighting. All my styles have to do with in fighting, actually, that I've trained in. And basically, that's where I want to see my people stay. And Jesse does that pretty well. You know, if you notice, even in the UFC, I see them. They throw a punch and then they back up. You got to be able to follow up. And in order to do that, you need the footwork, you need the head movement, you need to change levels. It's got to happen. Otherwise, you know, how are you going to go? You don't go toe to toe with somebody, because that's crazy too, because you both got a problem to solve. If you could reach him, he could reach you, you know? So, I mean, you know, you think of the, I think you said you did some Chinese martial arts.
I do. I teach Kung Fu.
You think about it. They don't go toe-to-toe, really. Yeah, see, they don't go toe-to-toe, if you notice. There's something going on where there's different hand monitoring motions, zoning, taking these 45-degree angles, things like that. You need to do that, because if you can reach them, they can reach you. And if you have a weapon, it's the same thing. Basically, that's my coaching that I say, you know, is the bigger. That's part of the science that I feel that, you know, is good advice for people that are fighting. Yeah, he does that pretty well.
Well, you also, you do a lot of weaponry, am I right? What kind of weaponry do you use?
I use impact weapons, knives. I've worked with flexible weapons also. There's palm stick staff, different lengths of staff. I work with the 4-foot and the 5-foot staff, which, believe it or not, is different. I feel that kind of training also helps fighters, because if you could avoid a knife, it's easier to avoid a kick and a punch. You know, I'm in the business too. I have, you know, traditionalfilipinoweapons.com. So I sell very high quality knives also. It turned me into that business, turned me into like this historian on learning different types of weapons, learning about them, if anything. It's hard to find some of these dead styles that aren't around anymore that pretty much died out because of firearms coming into play. Modern times, civilization and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You can't go chopping somebody's head off nowadays, that, you know, and pretty much anywhere in the world, unless it's a very bad area. I find it very useful, actually, and just everyday life and coaching my people. I like, you know, different swords like a Panute, a Ganunting, a Barong, which is, believe it or not, all three that I mentioned, you fight subtly different with those three different swords.
Well, that's the benefit you're getting.
It's quite interesting. I just find it interesting. It's turning me into a bit of a historian, because, you know, now I know what's going on historically with those weapons.
Oh, you have to have fun in what you do as well. One of the things that I totally agree with you, that once you have a weapon in your hand, not only do you know how it's used, but you know how it can be used against you. And that's one of the key elements that a lot of people may miss who don't use weapons, who only do empty hand. And I think having a weapon, not only it teaches you how to move your body in a certain way, it also teaches you how the weapon is used or the mechanics of it. And so you understand if someone else is trying to use it against you, and it definitely makes a huge difference.
Yes. I find it unbelievable. It's fun, you know, also. I know I'm not going to be able to use it, but it's fun. That goes for about anything. You think about it, like the lock we call a V-arm lock. Jesse, I may be wrong. They call that an Americana?
Yeah, the Americana.
Now, you think about it. Somebody's going for that particular lock on you. Because you're so familiar with putting it on other people, the other person could be countered by trying to put it on you because you know the lock. That applies for any a weapon, a punch, a kick, body tackle, a leg shoot. It's by being able to know it, mm-hmm. you can prevent. That's where the term power and knowledge. You learn how to defend it because you're familiar with it. As long as you know how to pull off that knowledge, you know, of course. But, you know, that's, you know, everything. If you got an unfamiliar submission that somebody's pulling off on you, you're not going to be able to counter because you don't even know he's going into it. So, you know, a sword at a particular angle coming at you or a knife coming in at you at a particular angle, and you train that because you've done it enough and you learn how to defend it.
Ron, let me ask you, if someone wanted to get in touch with you, whether, you know, to come and train with you or buy your weapons and all this kind of stuff, how would they reach you?
I'm on Facebook. You know, just look up my name, Ron Kazakowski. I got two different pages. One is for local people and the other one's for international. I'm on LinkedIn, actually under the same name. Hmm. Pretty much, you know, they could contact me through my email address, which is guru@psdtc.com. Guru spelled G-U-R-O. I know it's spelled different ways. Now, the PSDTC stands for Practical Self-Defense Training Center. That's the name of the school. It's a very old-fashioned name, you know, but I started a school back in the 80s, so it's this is a very old-fashioned name. Not exactly a cool MMA name, but, you know, but basically that's the best way to get a hold of me.
Listen, I want to thank you guys for taking the time out, joining me on my podcast, and sharing your knowledge and your expertise and your love of martial arts with everyone. And Jesse, I want to wish you the best of luck coming forward, you know, and your new fights coming up.
Thank you. Absolutely, man. It's a pleasure to be on here. I really hope I'll definitely keep you informed.
Yes, please do. And then we'll let everybody know.
Absolutely.
Definitely looking forward to that.
Yes, thank you. This is quite an honor. Man. Yeah, we're hoping for the best.
Yes. Yes.
It seems like the top promotions are the only ones holding them right now. We'll see Bellator and UFC.
I know if they put him in a fight, they're going to be very entertained. They're going to see martial arts in action. Mm-hmm. We just got to get there. We're hoping soon. There's a couple potential ones. I'll let you know because we want everybody watching.
Hey, guys, listen, thank you so much again for today. Really appreciate your time.
Absolutely, man. Thank you.
This has been an honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Okay. Thank you. You
guys. Likewise. Have a great one.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I'll be back with a new episode and a new guest. You can find all episodes of the Coaching Call podcast on Apple, Anchor, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and wherever you listen to podcasts. I ask that you please leave me an honest review. This episode was made possible by listeners like you. If you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and buy me a cup of coffee. Make it a large. I'm trying to keep this episode free of advertisements. Anything you can donate to the cause is greatly appreciated. To donate, go to paypal.me/SifuRafael. Thank you, and I really appreciate your help.